Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, presented by TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and if it sounds a little bit different, that's because I'm in a big old hotel room right now. It's not that big of a hotel room, to be honest with you. But we are here at Quaker Ridge getting set to broadcast the Curtis Cup starting on Friday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on FS1 and then on through the weekend, U.S. versus GB and I, and then, of course, on to Shinnecock Hills. And that is where I'm at. The whirlwind continues of traveling on the East Coast, getting you some of the best USGA championships in the world. We had a great U.S. Women's Open. Now we're going to have a great Curtis Cup, and then followed by what I can only believe is going to be an awesome U.S. Open at Shinnecock. But right now, the pros are at TPC Southwind. While the pros tee it up at TPC Southwind, you can play at a different PGA Tour stop at TPC Louisiana, host of the 2018 Zurich Classic. Book a tee time at TPC Louisiana and thousands of other great golf courses across the country on teeoff.com by PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to this here Clubhouse podcast, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. No spaces. Who needs spaces? TEEOFFBACON, 25% off on teeoff.com. Well, a fun one and a long one, as you can see as you're downloading this thing. This is Tom Coyne, who is one of my favorite authors in the world, a guy that I tell you, as you listen to this podcast, you'll see I feel like I have a lot in common with. And he just is about to release the course called Scotland, which is a book I just finished, and it's unbelievable, and it touches my heart because, of course, some of my my old-timey days back in Scotland, back in St. Andrews, getting a chance to live there and play there and caddy there, and I've got a chance, luckily, to play some unbelievable golf courses around the area. So he was a great guest, just as I expected. It's a book you must get on July 3rd. You can pre-order it as a Father's Day gift, which is a great idea, and also another good Father's Day gift. That's called a segue, by the way. Are you tired of getting your dad a World's Best Dad coffee mug for Father's Day? Is your dad's backpack ugly, old, or beat up? Well, surprise him this Father's Day with the Ogio Summit Laptop Backpack, complete with a dedicated padded laptop compartment and spacious front compartments with two accessory pockets inside, not to mention the Tech Vault, perfect for his sunglasses or small electronics. Use that all the time. Never have scratched sunglasses, FYI. He'll also look good. I trust Yojo for all my bag needs. I know your dad will too. Celebrate Father's Day by getting your dad, husband, or even yourself a new Summit bag. Hey, you can buy yourself gifts. It's 2018. Special to the listeners of this Clubhouse. Use the promo code Clubhouse for wait for it. Are you sitting down? I hope you're sitting down. Maybe you're on the treadmill. Stop or slow down a little bit because I'm going to tell you it's 40% off the Summit backpack on Ogio through June 20th. Ogio, the world's best bag. Yes, 40% off if you use the promo code Clubhouse. That's almost half. Almost half off. Get yourself a new backpack, or for dad, or granddad, or whoever. Or just buy a few and put them in the back. Through June 20th, that's what will happen. Enough of me. Let's get to Tom. And we welcome into the Clubhouse someone that I have been very excited to have be a part of this for a long time. He's a guy that I didn't know when he wrote Paper Tiger, and it touched home with me because, you know, I, as you people have heard plenty of times, I tried to do the mini tour circuit and obviously failed. I thought a course called Ireland was one of the most fun and envious endeavors that I'd ever really come across in the sense of golf writing. And now with his latest novel, A Course Called Scotland, Tom Coyne searches the home of this crazy, silly, ridiculous game to find the secret to it. Tom, I finished your book today, which comes out on July 3rd, and I got to be honest, it got a little misty towards the end of it, man. This one was a little bit more personal. Your life self, like, was just straight bleeding on the pages. The good, the bad things you've done. It was really, I felt like you really put yourself in this one.
Thanks, man. And thank you for having me back or having me on. I've never been on before, but you've been a great supporter and have been great to say nice things about the books, and I really appreciate it. And this one is the title, A Course Called Scotland, might make it sound sort of just like a sequel to the Ireland book, but it's definitely a different story. I think it, like you said, I think it's got a lot more of me. It's got everything I got. You know, I did sort of leave a lot on the page in this one. I don't think it's a heavy story or, hopefully it's just as, funny as maybe the last couple books have been. That's my hope. But yeah, it's a book where I had a lot of things to be honest about, and I didn't want to pull any punches. You know, I think if you sort of tell half a story, you know, the reader knows. And you know, I teach writing here at St. Joe's, and I'm always telling my students to, you know, be genuine, be honest, tell it all. And I had to listen to that advice myself, you know, in telling this story.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get into the book and some nuggets that I pulled apart and pulled aside as I was reading through it. But, I mean, you're going to get this question a lot when you do these kind of press junkets, if you will. But
right.
You did Ireland, you know, you walked it. It was an amazing story. And then you take on Scotland, which, you know, I mean, what is it? Probably, I mean, the whole UK is four times the size of Ireland, three times the size of Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got all these golf courses that you wanted to touch on. I couldn't believe some of the places you went in this book to find golf. I didn't even know they existed. I thought for a long time that, you know, when you got north of Dornoch and you got up by Brora, that was about it. And you proved me absolutely right. Wrong. But how do you, and you talked about this early in the book, but just for people that haven't got a chance, that haven't touched obviously now, but that will think about picking this up, how do you go about just the initial planning and process of A, explaining to your wife and your daughters that you're going to do this again, and B, just the massive planning that goes into this? Planning a golf trip for 5 days is a big undertaking.
Right. I know, exactly. I mean, gosh, the planning was really the better part, the better part of a year, easily. You know, so I'm trying to basically shoehorn in. I mean, the idea for this starts with, I'm going to play the Rota. And that'll be a cool story, maybe a magazine story, who knows. And then it kind of just grew from there and took off, and talking to friends and making new friends and talking to people about, oh, you got to play here, you got to play there. You know, the list of courses just grew and grew, and I had a map in my office, and I'm putting pins in the map of, like, all these different courses I'm going to play. And it just totally got out of hand to the point where I got to, like, 107 destinations, and you know, the window of time that I had, because, again, I'm a professor, so my semester ends, and I wanted the story to end at a qualifier for the Open Championship. So this is, you know, this story is my quest for the secret to golf, and see, you know, I'll put it to the test in Open qualifying. I'll play all the Open courses, and I'll see, you know, what I figure out. So I said, all right, that'll be a good ending. So that left me, like, 57 days. To try and play 107 courses. So the logistics of planning that, it was a full-time job. You know, I was, you know, between booking the golf, which Visit Scotland, the tourism folks were tremendously helpful there, but booking accommodations, figuring out, I mean, on some days I was jumping on a plane up to get a ferry, you know, to get to a tea time, then make the last ferry back off that island that took me to another island because that was the only place to stay. And, you know, there's only one flight on a Tuesday. You know, so yeah, planning all that stuff between ferry schedules and island flights and all that, it was, yeah, it was a full-time job. But it was fun because, you know, like planning golf trips, like a good part of the fun is in the planning.
Right.
It is in, like, putting together and just kind of in your head imagining how it's going to go. And I'm an obsessive person. I really love to dive into projects or trips or books or whatever I'm working on, and just sort of that becomes, like, everything. So this was a great chance to be, like, totally and obsessive in a really unhealthy way. It was just staying at my – banging away at my computer and just emailing, I think, everybody in Scotland to find a place to stay and get a tea time and then get people to join me and coordinate with their schedules. So yeah, it was pretty intense. And in terms of, like, getting Allison to St. Allison, as my friends call her, to get her to sign on for another one of these, you'll notice that, like, they, like, so Paper Tiger is like a year and a half of trying to play next level golf. So it's like 500 days. A course called Ireland, was 4 months. And we're married at that point. Then in the intervening years, then there's children come along. So I have two awesome little girls. So the trips have gotten shorter. So this one, 57 days. I mean, her expectations for me, you know, in the book I talk about it, like, you know, where do you set the bar? Like, the asshole husband bar is important you know, when you go asking for something, you know, for 50 days of golf in Scotland. You've got to have done some ridiculous stuff to go to your wife and say, you know, honey, I think this is a good idea. And thankfully, Allison's used to my shenanigans, and she was all for it. And they came for 2 weeks and lived in St. Andrews with me, and which was just a really special part of the story. But yeah, you know, what she was used to from me, you know, 50 days over the summertime, that wasn't so bad.
I've thought about this for a while, and I mean, like I mentioned when I opened it in Paper Tiger, but I do see a lot of myself in you. I don't know if that's better or worse, but you know, my wife, there'll be times where I'm on the road doing work, and it'll be I'm currently on a 3 week trip, quote unquote trip. It's a work trip. I mean, I'm doing three events in a row, and you know, I get the "I miss you" text, and "when are you coming home," and all this stuff. And I'm like, hey, you know, I'm on the road for the job. And last summer I was on something similar, and on the back end I got this kind of last minute invite to go to St. Andrews, and it does take a very special person to be with people like us who. And you mentioned it in the book, have this golf addiction. I mean, it really is a almost an addictive type of personality where, you know, you and I'm not going to give away the end of your book, but, you know, there was parts of the book where, you know, you had to go hit a couple more shots. And I've had that before. You know, I chased the sun at Nairn, and I've done some of these things that you've done. And I think most people probably would look at us and go, you people are insane. I mean, there's a problem with how much you guys like doing this.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're playing, you know, and on this trip, so I'm doing 36 a day minimum and 54 holes some days. And you tell that to people and they look at you and they're like, you know, they're like, what's wrong with you? And but to me, and when I'm there, you know, it just felt like perfectly reasonable. You know, the sun's out. There's a golf course. I'm going to go play.
Right.
And I'm going to play until the sun is down. And that's just kind of like how that's how I operate. So, but yeah, it does take a sort of special people to understand that about you and accept that about you and indulge it. Really,
yeah, absolutely.
Because if I'm not playing or I'm not planning to play, I'm a pretty miserable dude. You know, I don't three rounds a day. I don't pull that. I don't try to pull that off anymore. If I can get out Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, Tuesday. If I play 5 days a week now, I'm feeling pretty good. So
yeah, it's funny. I mean, I always go to this theme when you go on a golf trip with your friends, and my again going back to my wife or you know my best friend Andrew's wife, or you know any of my friends that have someone with them, and there's always a moment where you know it's day four, and you're at Bandon Dunes, or it's day four and you're in Scotland or wherever Pinehurst, you name it, and you're explaining to them that. You played 36 holes, and then you guys went and played the par 3 course. And even my wife, who's known me for 5 years and knows that golf is my passion and my job and, you know, what I love to do, she's still like, aren't you exhausted? And you're like, yeah, I am exhausted, but it's like a good exhaustion. Like, I want to be exhausted from all this. Like, this is what's fun for us.
There's no better feeling than, like, just falling into bed after playing 36 holes and having a great meal or a few pops or whatever and hitting the sack and knowing you're like back at it in the morning.
Exactly.
Because, you know, because just replaying all those shots in your head that tomorrow are going to go better. You know, it's just that chase. It's really the chase part of me that, I mean, I think people that are probably really like settled and content in like what they do, maybe who they are and just kind of, might not have this kind of penchant or understand it, but you know, I think there's an unsettledness and that runs through this whole story of me chasing something, and it's been in all my books, and I think this is the first time that I put my finger on it in a story and talk about it, which I hope adds something to it. But yeah, I'm you know, it's that possibility of like the tomorrow could be better. That is just so. It's so wonderful and tempting and irresistible that I can't get enough, you know. So thankfully Allison's starting to play tennis, and she played a doubles match and a singles match yesterday, and then she had a clinic last night.
Yeah, there you go. She's got the tennis bug.
Yeah, right. So she's kind of getting it. She's like, I just want to play more tennis. And I'm like, well, there it is. See, because you were probably a little better today than you were yesterday, and there you go.
Let's take a short break in the interview to tell you that at Buffalo Wild Wings, we'll admit that we often go overboard with our limited time offerings. We just can't help ourselves. We take our signature sampler for just $15, where you get wings and three shareable options like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's our aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecue, grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. I'm hungry already. You top it off with our new platinum margarita. Go overboard with us today at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. Back to Tom Coyne. So. You know, one of my favorite ideas you brought up early in the book was this idea of wind. And I thought it was such a smart point to be made. I mean, you have a way of describing certain things that make total sense that never made sense to me before. And you said, you know, we in the United States, most of us at least, are afraid of wind. It scares us. And then you go to Scotland and you're on, I don't know, let's say day 10, and you've played in brutal weather. And throughout the book, let me just warn people, the weather was not good when Tom was over there, but the wind was blowing. And you said, you know, you had this kind of realization moment where you went, you know, this is a natural part of the game over here. And this is where the game was created. And all of a sudden you weren't as scared of the wind anymore. And it was a very interesting take, because I feel like in the States, when we play parkland golf and you're hitting lob wedges and they back up off the greens, you know, you look outside and it's blowing 5 miles an hour and it's a little bit rainy and you're going, you know, I'm not going to go out today. It's like, yeah, right. To make us the best golfers, it has to be perfect outside. And that is not how golf was created.
No, and it's a whole, I mean, links golf, gosh, we talk about hours, right? You know, it's a whole other kind of sport, and wind is a huge part of that. And, you know, yeah, the golf we play over here, wind is like, I resent the wind because it's interrupting my chance to make birdie or par, and it's messing up my scorecard, and I want to have a good number today. You know, that's kind of how I think when I'm playing over here. You know, that I'm like, I'm entitled to a good number because I'm hitting it good, and I feel like I'm making good choices, and damn it, the wind is screwing up my golf ball. And you just can't think like that when you're playing over there, you know. And there is that point in the book where you come to accept it, or I come to accept it, is like, hey, man, like the weather I had the summer I was there it would not qualify as a summer. The weather was brutal consistently, and I just had to get, like, I had to be okay with it. And what was kind of cool is I found my golf, like, adapting to it. And my shots changing, and like, going over there, I didn't really know how to hit a good knockdown shot. And if I sat at the range up at my club here and tried to learn that, I don't know if I could. But playing into the wind for 3 weeks, you know, you learn to hit it low. Your body just starts to do it, you know, like, because those shots that just go flying up into the air and coming right back at you, it's, you know, it's just not going to work. I mean, because I think here, like, I grew up, like, learning to try to, like, avoid the golf course, you know, like, play over it, play over the scary stuff, get to the green, you know, 1-2 putt. And that's the beauty and the soul and the spirit of playing links golf, is that, you know, you're not avoiding the course. You've got to embrace it and play with it. You got to shake its hand, and you got to say, all right, all those humps and bumps out there, here it comes. And I'm going to try to guess what the ball is going to do across them.
Because, yeah, they're not so scary after all, I guess you could say.
And they're not. And once you're okay with it and you're like, hey, yeah, I'm going to putt from 50 yards off the green, or I'm going to hit an 8-iron from 90 yards because it's fun to hit a punch shot, it's really a blast, you know. And you have to let your ego go because, yeah, you're hitting what you think you hit an iron or a driver or whatever like that. Throw that out, you know. Don't be upset that you're hitting 7-iron from 110, because, you know, a 3/4 punch shot is your friend in Scotland. And that was a shot that I learned, and sometimes I'll even go back to over here, because it's fun to hit. It's fun to make, like, the right club go the wrong distance.
Right. It's a great way to put it. It took me, I'm 34 years old, and I think it was just the last about year and a half, 2 years, where I'd go on these trips with my friends, and maybe I'm a club longer than said friend when we play in Phoenix, and we'd go on these trips, and I almost do it as kind of like an F you to them, where they'll be like, yeah, what are you hitting here? And I'm like, oh, I'm hitting 4-iron. And they're like, you're hitting 4-iron from 160? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, like, this gives me the best chance of succeeding. You know, I mean, that's just simply what I'm trying to do here in the first place. And it's you're so true. I would love to talk to locals in St. Andrews and be like, do you know how far you hit your clubs? Because I bet they'd say no.
Right. Exactly. Like, and you know, and it's no accident that the yardage is over there. Everything's to the front of the green. You know, all our yardages are to the middle, because you don't want to ever carry the ball to the middle of the green. You know, you're thinking, all right, front of the green is as far as you want to go. You're probably even playing shorter than that. You know, you're trying to hit something low. So it's just all this imagination and creativity that becomes part of links golf. It's a whole other, you know, mind. It engages your mind in like a whole other way, you know. It's just a blast.
So I wanted to get your thoughts on golf course rankings, because I know you laid out your plans to play kind of the Rota, and you hit up some courses that people say you've got to play, and then you hit up some courses that, you know, most people have never heard of. What are your thoughts on, you know, the 1 through 100 golf course rating, basically idea that still exists?
I mean, I think it's good and valuable and worth doing, because it's good for conversation, right? It's good for like, well, I've played there and I played there, and why is that ranked ahead of that? It's good for debate. It's good for, you know, clicks. It's good for all that stuff. So I totally get it. And that's good for putting that list on your wall and trying to check a bunch off the list too. I always check it out and try and like see if my canon has grown at all, you know, if I can check any more off. But in terms of like how I like rate courses and feel about good, what makes a golf course great, it doesn't really jive with those lists at all.
Right.
So either, you know, I get the need for them, and like I said, people love to debate them. But I mean, how do you decide what, you know, if Cruden Bay is better than Muirfield, or if Prestwick is better than Troon? Like, how do you do that? You know, I know there are these checklists and these shot value things, which is an expression that you could probably do a whole show on. Like, what the hell is shot value? What does that mean? But, you know, I know there's like some metrics that go into it, and course raters take their job seriously and probably do a really good job, and better than I would, because as you see by like how I rank courses in the back of the book, like, I don't think any of my top 10 really hardly would show up. I mean, some would be like in the top 100 in Great Britain and Ireland, but, you know, the courses that the list would tell you are the best, you know, they're not my best. You know, my factor is I go by my gut, you know, how likely would I be to run back there tomorrow if you said I had another chance to play it? How excited would I be if you just said, all right, tomorrow we're playing Turnberry, tomorrow we're playing Nairn? You know, like, just can you gauge in your gut? Because for me, I'd get all giggly about Nairn.
Right.
And Turnberry, I'd be like, oh, cool. Maybe I can play Prestwick when I'm there too. you know, so it's like that butterfly in your stomach kind of factor that, and that's so subjective. It's that has to do with, you know, how was your last time there? How'd you play? Who'd you play with? How was the starter? How was the soup? You know, like, there's all these things that go into that, that personal list that we all have. So in my list, I'm not trying to be like a total contrarian. I know like John Garrity, throws in some crazy names in his top 10, which like courses people haven't heard of. And I'm not trying to do what he does exactly, even though our lists kind of overlap. But they're just, I just tried to give people the places that I genuinely most honestly felt were the days that I remembered most fondly.
Yeah, and, I mean, and you mentioned, you know, the experiences. I mean, I always talk about this, and it's sad. It's sad for people that care about how they play. But if you play a golf course and it's blowing 50 and you shoot 90 and you're with a couple of guys that aren't that fun to be around, your experience isn't going to be what it was, you know, 2 days before when you shot 72 and it was sunny and you were with your buddies and the soup was good. You know, I mean, there's so many factors that play into it outside of the fact that you're playing a golf course, because they're all golf courses, especially over there. I mean, you can take a hole from Fraserburgh and Nairn and Cruden Bay and St. Andrews and mix them up, and you know, 99 out of 100 people might not know which one is which, you know, but it's about the experiences that you have at these places. I think it's so important to the fun factor.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's all about the experience. But I still think that, you know, I look at that list, like top 100 in Great Britain or, you know, top 100 in the world, and I do straight up scratch my head about some of them. You know, that the Trump Aberdeen, you know, is ranked ahead of, like, Cruden Bay.
It's unbelievable.
Just that doesn't even...
No.
I mean, come on. That's not a real list.
Right.
Let's be it.
That's my issue sometimes, is there's so many politics. I mean, and of course, this is before... You know, he was President Trump, but there's so many politics that go in the fact that these courses are ranked where they are, and you're like, no. Have you played 18 holes there? I mean, Cruden Bay is one of the best places in the world. I mentioned Frazenburgh. I got to tell you, I was like fist pumping throughout your book because I did this Scotland golf media trip a few years back with Darren Bunch and a crew, and
I think I was there.
We were supposed to meet up. That was when you were doing your book.
Because Rue McDonald was like Shane Bacon. Is in Nairn. I was in Nairn. He's like,
man,
you got to meet up.
I would have made it a book.
Out playing 54 holes, and I think you were staying at the Golf View in Nairn or something.
Yeah, that's right. I would have made the book. Dang it. I wish that would have happened. Anyway, we were playing, and the idea of our media trip was to play these courses that most Americans don't go play. And so your praise for Frazenburgh got me all excited. I was so pumped up because we played it, and we walked out, and we were like, this place doesn't even have a golf shop, and this is unbelievable.
Right. I mean, that place was, you know, yeah, you play the first hole and you're like, what am I doing? You know, it's nothing, you know, it's not special. And then you start playing over this, like, mountain that's just in the heart of the golf course. And, I mean, that is, like, true, you know, beautiful links, not messed up by any designer, and old and ancient and just awesome. That place is we just had a blast there. You know, that's a place that people skip. Because there is very much and I hope this happened a little bit I know it happened with the Ireland book because people have told me, but I hope it happens with this book too, is that golfers who have that checklist of just like, all right, I got to play these 10 bucket lists before I die, that they, yeah, do that. That's great. But that you go back or you expand your list and you try some of these other places, that are a little more off the beaten path, you know, that, yeah, you're going to go play Royal Aberdeen, but man, play Merkur, like right next to
right.
It. It's so good. You know, you're going to go up to play Dornoch, but please play Brora, you know? And I guarantee you that you'll remember probably your day at Brora is going to be more memorable, as great as Dornoch is, just because it's such a unique and quirky and unspoiled James Braid gem that, you know, so yeah, definitely encouraging folks to go, to get off that beaten path is hopefully something that comes from the book.
Yeah, it's a hard sell. I actually was texting a best friend of mine yesterday because I'd just gotten through, I think it was Macrahanish part of your book, and it's, you know, it's something I haven't done and it's something I want to do. And I was reading through it, and you know, you're so good at painting the picture of what you've done and how you did it. And you talk about the good and the bad. That's a very that's a great quality of the golf book, because it's not all roses and sunshine. I mean, there's brutal days where you don't want to play the golf course and you're there and you know you have to do it because it's your job. And so I was texting a friend of mine, and you know, you get the text back like, yo, I'm not going to go to Scotland and not play St. Andrews and Turnberry and Troon. And I just want to be like, trust me on this, you know, like, trust me, one day when you're 50 or 60, we'll go do that. But you know, let's go play these courses that, we're not going to see a McDonald's. You're not going to hear an American accent for a long, long time on this trip. And you're probably going to remember this one way more than you're going to remember maybe one that you go play all the places everybody's got the shirts from. But, I mean, it's no knock that either. I mean, you want to play the old course, for goodness sakes. It's my favorite golf course in the world. You did this that I thought was really interesting. And it's a quality that I'm not sure I have in me. You met up with people on your trip in this book that you'd never met before in person. And so judging by the way you talk about yourself, you had to be nervous and worried. I don't know if scared's the right word, but what were you thinking when you meet these people?
So, yeah, I was totally terrified. Well, the idea, you know, and I learned from the Ireland book, or, you know, you learn something from each book, and hopefully the next one gets better because you've learned something about the writing or how to do it or whatever. You know, and I know that the story can't just be, I golfed again, it was great, I went to the pub again, I heard a funny joke, etc. You know, it can't just be that ad nauseum. And I certainly didn't want this book to be that. And the way to make it not that is to make the story about characters. You know, the books have hopefully all been character-driven, but probably this one more than any of the others, that, you know, it's really a story about people and relationships, and how golf, the role that golf plays in that, and the role that travel plays in that. I mean, travel bonds people like nothing else. And I certainly found that to be the case in this story. So what I did is I'm like, all right, I got to invite a lot of people to come on this trip. So I started just throwing out like open invitations, and I felt like squirrely doing it, but I thought, you know, let's just trust the universe to put interesting people in my path and just, you know, what the hell, you know, and the writer in me also feeling like, all right, the worse this goes, the better, you know, like
right.
If this goes totally off the rails and someone turns out to be nuts, it'll be really good for the book. So, so I, you know, Facebook, I'm inviting people. I was on, Matt Adams show on Sirius XM and threw out an invite. Hey, anyone want to play Scotland this summer? So, you know, the emails start coming in. Everyone wanted to play St. Andrews, and that was the time I was going to be with my family. So I was like, nah, not St. Andrews, but if you want to come meet me here, there, or elsewhere, let's go for it. So, yeah, there were probably a dozen. I was met by well over a dozen people, but 8 or 9 or maybe 10 of them I'd never met before and had only exchanged emails with. And I was going to spend like 10 days with them, golfing and playing and eating and living with them. I had a strict, like, no roommate policy.
Right. Well, thank goodness.
Yeah. I gave up on roommates like after Ireland. So, but you know, all these, you know, unknown people were showing up and joining me, and thank God they did, because they make the book. Is kind of how I feel about it. And they saved me from having to just be a book about me, because I didn't want this just to be some self-indulgent, like, search for my soul. You know, I wanted the book to be about other people and matter to other people. And so we end up becoming this, like, little team of, like, random misfit. I mean, the people, like, all right, so I've got, like, Grandma Billy, who's a reader from, who's a Canadian, beautiful, wonderful Canadian woman living in Colorado who wrote to me about my Ireland book, and so she came over with her partner Jean, and I'd never met her before. This guy Penn, someone named Penn, I'd never even heard of anyone named Penn before. He comes from Georgia. The director of golf from Stream Song signs up. There's a designer from Chicago, the world speed golf champion Gretchen Johnson, she signs on. Then I blend that in with some of my Philly crowd, who people would know from the Ireland book, who are, they're Philly through and through. And it's just this incredible mix of people who just would have no business ever associating with one another if it weren't for golf, if it weren't for Scotland. And what's so incredibly cool about it is these are like, they all became dear friends of mine that I probably text with, like, now on, like, a daily basis, some of them. I email with Grandma Billy, like, 3 times a week still. She sends gifts for my girls all the time, and it's just become this incredible friendship. And in a couple weeks, we're having a book launch at my club here, Waynesboro, outside of Philadelphia. And we're having, like, a tournament and a kickoff party. And every single person in the book, you know, aside from the Scots, every American or Canadian is coming in for the party. I mean, from Canada, from Arizona, from California, from Florida, everyone's going to be there. And I didn't, like, twist their arms. That, you know, I just told them this is what we're doing, and everyone said, I'm in. And because they want to see each other again. And that's just, I mean, that to me, it just means a lot. Because, you know, in the book I talk about, like, I got to a point where I was sort of lacking, like, genuine, probably, like, genuine friendships. And connections with people. And the great gift of this adventure for me, you know, aside from the secret to golf and the chance to play in an open qualifier and get to know all these places, was that I came out of this with people that I'm going to, like, be in contact with and be close to for the rest of my life. And that's an awesome gift, man.
You have to talk to me about Skibo Castle, because
yeah,
this place sounds I mean, I've stayed at some decent hotels in my life, but I don't think I've ever stayed at a place that even comes close to this.
So you've never been? You didn't play the Carnegie Club?
No, I've never been.
All right. Well, you must. So I crossed it off my list. And one, I was only playing links courses, and I'd heard that there were probably like two places in Scotland that no matter how many strings I tried to pull, like that I just wasn't going to get on. And I guess there's a course at Glen Eagles that I had no shot of, and that's fine because I wasn't going there anyway. But you know, when I'm up and around Inverness and I'm seeing, well, geez, there's this course here, the Carnegie Club at Skibo Castle. But I was told, you know, that's pretty much off limits. So I just shot him an email, and wouldn't you know, like the director of marketing comes back, just like, well, you can't play because you have to be staying here. It's, you know, it's very much members only. You have to be staying at the estate. And then she comes back and says, well, hey, maybe we could sort you a room at the estate. I said, well, that sounds like a lovely idea. And don't mind if I do. That, yeah, I rejuggle the schedule. I'm with a bunch of friends at that point. I tell them, like, yeah, see you in a couple days, guys. Good luck at the B&B. I'm going to Shangri-La here. So it was just like and I've stayed – obviously, we travel a lot. We stay in a lot of places and stayed in some great places, but never quite stayed anywhere like this. I mean, it was just like a taste of a different kind of world and life. So I show up, and there's a butler waiting for me, you know, with like a tray of whiskeys and a kilt, like waiting at the door, Mr. Coyne, da da da. And, you know, I walk in and you know, there's another person waiting for me to show me to my room, and I'm like, well, wait, my car's out there. Because I didn't see any cars anywhere when I pulled up to this huge manor house, so I was all confused, and I thought I was lost and in the wrong place. Like, no, your car's being taken care of. I'm like, what about my bags? No, your bags are in your room. I'm like, wait a second, I just, you know, it was like spooky. It was hospitality, like supernatural hospitality. I get up to my room, it's got like quarters for my butler, which I forgot to bring. But next time I will bring my butler.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like you whiffed on that, by the way.
Oh, that was a total whiff. He's at home, like doing nothing.
Was it like the butler in a, what is it, big, what is it? It's not Big Daddy, Mr. Deeds, the butler that just shows up behind you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, in a kilt. it was like that. So, and then, you know, I get to my room and they're like, oh, I'm kind of hungry. And they're like, well, call the kitchen. You know, there's no room service men. You just call them and tell them what you want, which freaked me out. I mean, it was so nice. I was like uncomfortable.
Right.
Like I was like nervous. I wanted to walk around and check the place out, but I'm like, no, I'm just going to stay in my room. And the room was so absurd. I walk into my bathroom and there's like two giant clawfoot tubs in the middle of the room. And the bathroom is the size of, it's just massive. So I just like hung out and just checked out my room and there's like a guide to etiquette while you're there and stuff. And it was, I mean, this is the place where Madonna had her wedding. So really over the top. Awesome. It was non-transactional. You couldn't use money for anything. I couldn't even use a credit card for anything. I got a massage because at that point I played like 60 rounds in like, you know, 25 days, and I was feeling a little sore. So they arranged a massage for me, and I couldn't pay for it or tip anyone. But it was funny. They gave me, like, crystal jars to sniff from, and the aroma that I liked would, like, identify what was wrong with my body or where I needed attention. And so I'm, like, sniffing all these jars, and everything points to me just being, like, exhausted, weary, and tired. And I'm like, yeah, I thought they were just going to, like, send me back to bed. But 90 minutes later, cracked me from, like, a new mold, man. I was, like, reborn at Skibo. And this was before we even played the golf course. And the next morning, we go out, and they let a friend come and join me. And it was so cool, man. It was just – so you go into the halfway house, and everything's free. And they have a thing on the wall, a peg for, like, where you'd hang your bag tag. And so it's, like, you know, it's – Pine Valley, Oakmont, Cypress, like all the clubs, like where members at Skibo would have left their bag tag from home. So of course, like we go to our bags and like rip off our bag tags and hang them up there. And mine from McCall Country Club in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. par 64, and it's got my driver's license photo on the card because it's like, you know, so that it knows, so I didn't hop the fence.
Right.
So I hung it right there, right in front of Pine Valley, and felt good about it.
As you should have. Next time I go to Massage Envy, I'm gonna ask them where the aroma jars are. Be like, you guys,
jars out because they don't know what's wrong with your
exactly. When my membership there, it was the only place in the book that was. I mean, it was the only place in the book that didn't sound like every B&B I'd ever stayed at in Scotland.
Yeah, I know. Otherwise, yeah, if you stayed in Scotland, my accommodation stories will ring true. But this place was different. And fair enough, they weren't all – the people who worked there and you had me there, they weren't snobby, and they were just really great. But it was just – I didn't know what to do.
Right.
Like, when I left, I'm like, can I pay for my dinner? Like, where's my tab? They're like, we don't have those. You know, when I asked for a key to my door, and they're like, the doors don't lock here, sir. You know, don't – you're fine. I'm like, my gosh, what is this place?
It sounds like I've been to some, you know, I've been lucky enough to be invited to go play some very exclusive country clubs in America. And I am just the type that I get uncomfortable because it's so nice. Like, I don't really know what to do. And I don't know where to go to the bathroom or what I can. Do I take my hat off? Where do I change my shoes? I always feel just like I'm out of place. Like, I shouldn't be here. What am I doing here? And that's what when you said in the book you didn't go out in the hall because you didn't know what courtesy thing you should be doing or not. I was cracking up because it's so true. It felt like an American country club.
Yeah, totally. I've had a bunch of those experiences over here where you're like, yeah, shoes or no shoes, or is that the members' bathroom?
Right.
And that doesn't happen. And it's amazing. Like, we think of Scottish golf or, like, the homeland of golf and St. Andrews and Muirfield, and you have this idea, this notion that it's going to be, like, really stuffy. And, hey, Muirfield, they do their stuffiness with the kind – like, you kind of want it to be stuffy there, actually. But otherwise, I mean, dude, these are just places to play a game, you know. They – for, the, like, 98% of the clubs couldn't give a damn, like, if you're wearing your shoes or not, or – you know, where, what door you entered or any of that kind of nonsense. You know, it's very much, the vibe there is a lot more laid back than I think people would expect golf in Scotland to be. You should take your hat off indoors though. We Americans aren't good at that.
I really do. I went to
your hats that you wear, it's gotta be difficult.
Well, I bought a hat today at Quaker Ridge and I walked by one of the USGA guys and he goes, "Oh, wow, another hat." And I was like, "Listen, man, this is my thing. This is my thing."
Do you have, like, a hat room?
I have a golf room that has now turned into kind of a hat room. So there's a lot of golf clubs, and there's a lot of hats, and there's a lot of golf shoes. That's basically it. You know, my puppies, it's my puppy's favorite room because at any point, during the day, on any day, she can find about 70 golf balls hidden amongst hats and shoes and clubs, and she's a big fan of golf balls. So, hey, now it's kind of, I guess, my dog's room? I don't really know, but that's where I store all of this stuff. And, yes, I do continually add hats, and I know it's an issue. One of the things you did in this book was talk very much about your attitude on the golf course, and it's something I battle with. I battle with my attitude on the golf course. I feel like when I go into the round – knowing I've got to be a quote-unquote good guy that day, I'm pretty good about it. You know, if you're playing with a boss or my father-in-law or, you know, you're trying to impress somebody, you know, I'm not going to get frustrated. It's the comfortable groupings, your friends, where I feel like my frustrations still come out and I hate it about myself. And you wrote that. You wrote, you know, you get done with the round and you hate yourself for the way you acted on the golf course. And I think a little bit of this book and this trip was about trying to solve that as much as it was trying to solve golf. So have you solved that? Do you feel like you're a better person on the golf course?
No, absolutely. I think in the end, you know, it's not a story where, like in Paper Tiger, I took the approach to, I'm going to try and solve my golf via, in a technical sense, I'm going to solve my golf swing. You know, I'm going to hit 1,000 balls. I'm going to get a coach. I'm going to get on the monitor, I'm going to do all that stuff, you know, and that was, I'll take that path to getting better at golf. And I got a lot better at golf. But yeah, this kind of secret to golf or getting the thing, that quest is very much more a cerebral one here and about attitude and approach, and what I learn over there and learn in Scotland, where, and I do think that I've definitely, my attitude has turned around when it's come to the way I play. I think there's a whole lot more, I play with a lot more acceptance, which is kind of a hokey word, but, you know, I've come to accept a lot more things about my life, and that's trickled down into my golf, accepting good and bad things about who I am and the way I play or what happens to me on the golf course. That's something that, like, I was told when I was doing Paper Tiger that you have to learn to accept your shots and get on with the next one. I couldn't do that. I was haunted by my bad shots. Right. I'm haunted by three putts. But I think that I've gotten a lot better with that. I've gotten a lot better with, you know, kind of just, you know, surrendering to the idea of, like, all right, this is the shot that I have, or this is how good I am, or this is what I'm able to do, and I'm going to do my best with it. You know, I've gotten a lot more, I probably just worry about my golf less. And that has made a big difference in my results, I think. I'm actually playing, like, really well this season. It kind of takes a while for, like, you learn something, and it takes a while for it to sink in. So it's been a couple years since Scotland. But I'm playing right now better than I even did in Scotland, because the things that, you know, I learned over there, you know, being present, and just trying to, like, hit, I'm just going to try and hit a good golf shot right here. And I'm not going to think about the next one or if I can make birdie from there or the fact that I'm five over, you know, that kind of stuff. I've gotten a lot better at shutting that stuff out. I'm trying to be present, and I'm trying to just be damn thankful that I'm golfing.
Right.
And when I do that, like, I hit it pretty good. Because there's no pressure in that.
Exactly.
Like, you know, there's no pressure, and, like, this kicks ass, man. I'm golfing today, and I'm actually kind of good at this. And if I just let myself be good at it, it's going to be so much fun. That's yielded that kind of attitude, which is kind of like a lack of an attitude, I guess. It's yielded some pretty good results.
Let's take one more break in the interview. I hope you're enjoying it. Just remind you that the pros are going to tee it up this week at TPC Southwind. You can go play TPC Louisiana, host of the 2018 Zurich Classic. I played the place a year and a half ago. It's really fun, and you might see an alligator. Book a tee time at TPC Louisiana and thousands of other great golf courses across the country on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and you can do so without booking fees. That's right. There's no booking fees. None. Zero. Zilch. Every course, every tee time, plus as a valued listener of the clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. Okay, that was our last break. Back to Tom. It's something that's helped me lately is two things. One is, you know, there's a thing in my head where I'm thinking about a golf shot and I'm nervous, and I'm thinking about, you know, left, right, center, short, long, all of the things that it could not be, and right. You know, one thing that's helped me mentally is I've told myself lately, like, it's either going to be good or it's not. Like, there's really only two things. It's like a 5-footer. Right. You're either going to make the 5-footer or you're going to miss it. And that is literally the only outcomes possible. And the other thing that's helped me is nobody gives a shit what you're doing. Literally, not one of your best friends. Your caddy probably doesn't care unless you're paying them. And nobody cares. Like, I feel like we think as golfers that people care, and we're, like, nervous that they care that maybe we shot 75 when we should have shot 71, and nobody cares. Not even your best friends really care. And exactly. So why do we care so much? And that's something that I've really tried to kind of hammer in my golfing brain that's always been kind of a psychopath golf brain, is, like, just go play, man. Like you said, you're out there playing. That's pretty awesome.
And no, I mean, that's a huge – And that's a sort of revelation in the book that I have at one point, is exactly like you said, like, nobody gives a damn what I'm doing. And even if they do, Like, what anyone else is thinking about me is none of my damn business.
Right.
And that is, like, that's something that I've been applying to my life in general as, like, a writer and as a person. Because as a writer, you really, especially, like, with the months that I have coming up here, there's going to be a lot of reviews. There's going to be stuff on Amazon, whatever. People are going to say different things. And I've gotten to a point where it's like, hey, man, that's cool. That's your deal. I'm going to stay on my path. Right, you know, I'm keeping my side of the street clean. You do your thing on yours. It's all good. You know, whatever you think about me or whatever I'm doing, that's fine. And I can do that in my life. It's like, but why couldn't I do that in my golf?
Right.
Where I do still have this hang up that, like, this matters so much that and the whole world is judging me, and I'm judging myself. Like, I'm basing my worth on whether this 4-footer goes in. Once you get to the point, like you said, where it's like, I could miss this, and that's okay. It's funny how they seem to go in, you know.
Right.
So perspective, I guess, is what it is. I think overall in this book, and the difference maybe between the Ireland book or the Paper Tiger, it's a little more, I've grown up a little more, and I think I have a little more perspective on some different things that I hope makes my approach to the game a little bit different, you know, and maybe that people will, and you know, this is kind of a combo. Like, Paper Tiger is a book you can read, and, like, I think maybe you can improve your game a little bit. There's stuff in there that's valuable. A Course Called Ireland, you can read it, and you'll get some laughs and want to go to Ireland, I hope. And I hope this book combines a little bit of the two. I think there's some things to actually learn here about golf, the mental approach to it, but even, like, some stuff about just playing the game physically that maybe you can take from it. But that also, hopefully, it's a book that makes you want to go to Scotland.
Yeah, it definitely makes me want to go to Scotland. I've sent like 10 and 11 p.m. texts to friends and my dad the last like 2 weeks as I've been kind of like reading
them. We got to do. We'll do a trip.
I would love it. So here's the $1 million question,
yeah.
And you got to answer it. Don't be dancing around this now.
Oh, I know what you're going to ask me.
One trip left.
Yeah.
Ireland or Scotland? Where are you going?
I knew you. See. I'd even talk about that in the book. Like, I totally screwed myself because I'm forever going to be asked now, Ireland or Scotland, which is better, right? If you follow up an Ireland book with a Scotland book. All right, so one trip. You know I'm promoting a Scotland book here, Shane.
I was going to say, so, I think you should probably say Scotland, even though I've never played golf in Ireland. And I'm doing it in 2019, and I'm really excited about it. I've never gone to Ireland and played one golf course in my entire life.
Shame on you.
I know. I feel
when
like
are you going?
I'm going to go in 2019. I have to email you a lot about it because I'm planning it for like 12 guys. But I think you can say Scotland because you're promoting a book. It's called A Course Called Scotland, so you should probably say Scotland right now.
No, I will say Scotland because if you said I had one trip, then I'm probably going to go to St. Andrews. That's just what I'm going to do, because not even just for the golf. Because St. Andrews to me is the world's greatest town,
ever.
Location, place, everything.
It's got awesome.
Everything. It's a university town. It's a history town. It's got ruins. It's got it's the birthplace of golf. It's got the old. It's got great restaurants. It's got incredible people. It's just everything. So yeah, one trip, St. Andrews wins it, and that's where I'd head. It's funny, and I just did a story, for Northern California Golfer, the Golf Association up there, their magazine. They asked me to do an Ireland versus Scotland piece, so I did it as like a 9-hole match, and had all these different categories of like value, fun, history, you know. And in that tally, Ireland came out one up. It's just the way the math went. It's the way the ball went that day. And, you know, if you want to do – there are two different kinds of trips. If you an Ireland trip, you know, if you just want to go with the dudes and have fun and laugh and hear jokes and see crazy stuff, you know, great vistas and great views and really, you know, golf courses that will just blow you away with drama – and you're just there for the crack, as they say in Ireland. You know, an Irish trip for fun is really tough to beat for a buddy's trip, especially. Now, if you're a golfer, if you're a hardcore golfer, if you're into history and you really want to golf your brains out, man, Scotland can't be beat. because there are so many pockets in town. St. Andrews, one of them, Inverness, North Berwick, Prestwick, whatever, where you can drop anchor for a week. Golf your brains out. Golf, incredible places. And never be more than, you know, a half hour from where you're staying. And just really and play places where the history is so rich and the game matters so much. You know, in Ireland, they're, you know, the game's a little bit younger. They're, and some people still would consider it a British game in Ireland. So, you know, but if you're a golf head, Scotland is where it's at.
And you're winning either way. Let's be honest. If you're going to Ireland or Scotland
totally.
To play golf, it's exactly. You're not losing the trip if you're looking across the water and going, man, I wish I was over there. Also, one last thing I think that you and I can both agree on is if you go to Scotland, just play Brora. Just go play Brora. And if you
Brora.
Hate it, if you hate Brora, Tom Coyne and I will Venmo you the green fee back if you hit us on Twitter. If you go to Brora and say, I played 18 holes and it was awful, we will Venmo you your green fee back.
Yes, I will. I'll use your Venmo account.
Yeah,
they'll absolutely Venmo.
They'll forget about this at this point. Don't worry.
No one's listening.
A course called Scotland, July 3rd. Make sure you pick it up. I loved it. I really did. I mean, I'm not just saying that because you're on the line. I thought it was your best book yet in the sense of interest in storylines and stories within the stories and the people. And I obviously have a soft spot in my heart for Scotland, you know, being over there and caddying and living there and that. And it brought back a lot of memories and it brought back a lot of good places that I went and places that we've eaten and places that we've slept at that are similar to the places that you've been to in the book. And now I got to go to Skua Castle, apparently, because that's the one place I haven't been.
You just have to tell them that you're ready to put down the $50,000 and they'll give you a room.
You know what? Somebody Venmo me that and then we'll be good to go. I'll take you with me to Skibo if you Venmo me $50,000. Tom Coyne, and where can people pick it up? I mean, it's going to be on Amazon and everything like that?
Yeah, anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or support your local independent bookstore, too. So you can get it anywhere. Yeah.
My last question before you go. You kept talking about weight loss in the book. Have you gained your weight back?
I put it all right back
nice.
On during the writing process.
Nice.
But I was on sabbatical this spring for my teaching, and I went on a little bit of a fitness kick, and I'd like to say I'm back to my Scotland weight.
There you go.
So I'm ready to go on a press tour and not, you know, be ashamed of my bloated, bee-stung face.
I just was amazed at how many times I read the word haggis in this book. I mean, I knew people ate it, but you like it. It's unbelievable.
I love me some haggis. Yeah, a lot of haggis stories. A lot of stories in haggis.
Prepare yourself for haggis in the book. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Shane.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Many thanks to Tom Coyne for jumping on and chatting that long about a book that I think you will all enjoy. If you've made it to this point, for goodness sakes, go buy it. Probably worth your time in the last 50, 51 minutes or so. And a reminder that if you're tired of getting your dad a world's best dad coffee mug for Father's Day, you need to get your dad a new backpack. Surprise him this Father's Day with the Ogio Summit Laptop Backpack. I trust Ogio for all my bag needs, and I know your dad will as well. Celebrate Father's Day by getting your dad, your husband, or even yourself, happy Father's Day to yourself, a new Summit Backpack. Special for listeners of the Clubhouse. Use promo code Clubhouse. You'll save 40%, unbelievable, 40% off the Summit Backpack on Ogio.com through June 20th. Ogio, the world's best bags. Hey, do me a favor. Watch the Curtis Cup this weekend. And also, do me a favor. Watch the U.S. Open next week. We've got some podcasts rolling out. You'll like them. We are nearing the opening round at Shinnecock Hills. Should be exciting. All right. Have a great weekend.